From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of July 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Just a quick reminder, if you've not yet signed up for the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnerships webinar tomorrow, looking forward to the consumer demand potential for sustainably raised crops, row crops in particular, using things like cover crops, no-till, and other conservation methods. With the keynote by Jonathan Kappas, University of Illinois Extension Agricultural Policy Specialist, you probably should. You can visit Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership online at ilsustainableag.org. That's ilsustainableag.org to sign up right now.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn up 9 3/4 today, finished at $3.48 1/4, December 3.60 1/2, a dime higher. And March futures up 10 1/4, 3.71 1/2. Next year's May at 3.77 9 1/2 higher. And July corn of 2021 at $3.80 3/4 a cent a bushel, up 8 cents. July soybeans at $3.93 3/4, 9 1/2 higher than November at $8.99, up 16 3/4. And January futures at $9.03 1/2, 18 3/4 of a cent higher. Next year's March, 896, 17 1/4 higher in the May futures, up 16 3/4 at 893 3/4. The bean oil futures up 23 cents at 28.21. The bean meal at 292.70, 6.40 higher. And wheat futures in the July at 498 3/4, 8 3/4 of a cent higher. For the soft red, hard red at 442 1/2 cents, up 7 cents a bushel. Live cattle futures, August contract 97.30, $1.02 1/2 higher. The October at $100.67 1/2 per 100 pounds. For the live cattle, up 95 cents, and feeders finished 22 1/2 cents higher at 133.7 1/2. And the September there at 134.2 1/2, up 65 cents. Lean hogs July contract at $44.80, down 37 1/2 cents. August at $49.07 1/2, up a nickel for the day. The crude oil at $39.61, 35 cents higher. Ethanol futures at $1.20 9/10, up 9 1/10 of a cent. And diesel fuel or heating oil up 9 2/10 at $1.19 1/2. Gasoline on the RBOB at $1.20 9/10 of a cent per gallon. That's just about 8 1/10 of a cent per gallon higher. The Dow Jones Industrial off just about 9 points. The U.S. dollar down 0.244 for the day, and the gold futures $22.60 lower. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson in Hollister, Missouri. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome, Todd. You know I love doing it.
Yesterday, Jackie, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the grain stocks number and released the latest acreage report. Give me your assessment.
Well, I'll tell you, it was an interesting report. It seems as if their reaction was more based on acreage than it was on grain stocks, okay? Because if you looked at acreage, we lost 5 million acres of corn down to 92. Now, we have to remember that there was a note on the report that did say that there was 2.239 million acres of corn not planted yet as of the second week of June. We gained 290,000 acres of beans over the March report. They said there was over 12 million acres not planted. Well, we know that we're not going to get a full 12 million acres, but on wheat, we lost 140,000 acres compared to the March. And so, you know, the big focus suddenly with managed money being as short as it was on corn, especially, just she just took off like blazes. And on top of that, I think when you add to this, and I think this is part of what has happened as we watch the markets during the day today, and that is that farmers are making some sales, and we've got these are sales based on contracts that were already in place, and therefore the commercials are now buying back those short contracts. You know, they always sell the market in case they paid too much for a grain, and then in a situation like this, when the farmer starts to close out the contract, they buy those futures back. So I would guess that a lot of this is being motivated by that. Now, we would look at the grain stocks report. I do have one other thing here. There was a deviation on that report, Todd, like always, and Corn acreage could be as high as 93.6 or as low as 90.4. That's with a 90% confidence level. On beans, acreage could be 86.3 or 81.3, and that is also with a 90% confidence level. So we know that there's going to be some moving around going on here yet. Grain stocks, on the other hand, we picked up 200 million on corn versus June of last year, and we were about 300 million higher than what the expectation was. Beans came in 400 million less than we were last year on June, which was positive, and wheat came in 36 million less. I think when you look at the big deal or the big situation, the farmer right now is holding 57.9% of the corn versus 56.7 last year at this time. On beans, they're at 45.7% versus 40.9%. That is not a good thing. And wheat, 22.2% versus 19% last year. So, you know, when you look at the harvested acres, it's going to be interesting to see this next USDA report because, you know, they took harvested acreage at 84.02, at 178.5. We're going to add 2.1 to the carryout in June and add 225 of stocks. That gives us 17.62 available crop that's available, right? And in our June report, the USDA said we were going to have 18.123. So there's a 500 million bushel difference there. So that's what we're all going to be looking for now here on this next report is what the adjustments are going to be and what kind of an impact that may have. And that, I'm sure, is motivating some of what's going on here, too.
Did you look for the state-to-state differences in these reports?
Absolutely. It's a little disturbing, to be honest. I mean, we've got only 8.2% of the corn acres are below trend line, and one of the states is Kansas. That's 6.5 million acres, basically. At trend line, we got 43.1%, and Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Nebraska, all within at trend line. Ohio, above trend line, 40.1%, and Iowa is the biggest one that's in there. We've got Missouri, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And so, you know, it's a situation where, you know, the majority of the crop is either at trend line or above trend line. So that does bode to or back up the idea that this is going to be a pretty decent sized crop. When we look at beans, we have 10.1% that's below trend line, Mississippi and North Dakota, of course. Not a big surprise. 40.4% at trend line. And again, we've got Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, all in the at trend line. And then 43.1% above trend line. And there we have Minnesota, Missouri, and Iowa, all in that level. So I think that as long as we hold these numbers, it really backs up the idea that we are going to have a fairly big crop again.
Turn your attention now to the support and resistance levels that we usually discuss each week.
Okay. Well, we, of course, are changed over to September on corn and August on beans. July is in delivery. So on September, we have support at 325 and 297, resistance at the 350 and 382. Hopefully, you know, that we'll close above those numbers. That would be really nice. December, 355 and 325, and then 375 and 361. On beans, August, 884 and 870. Excuse me, are the support levels, and 892 and 904 are the resistance levels. We've got a crossover for the trend lines there of 850. We did break out above the downtrend line. Now we'll have to see once over the next number of days whether we can continue to hold that position. On November, support 870 and 849, resistance 891 and 904, and the crossover in November is 855. Dow Jones, support is at 25,230, so resistance is at 29,568. We've been there for a bit. The dollar basically continues to just kind of weaken a little bit. Support at 96.34 and resistance at 97.87. So the dollar is helping us a little bit. You know, it's keeping us a little competitive.
Where does the managed money stand at this point? And where will it be the next time that report comes out?
Oh, that's a bad question. I mean, you know, who knows what the managed money might or might not do, but I can tell you where they are right now. They're 47,000 short on soft red wheat compared to 34. They're 243,000 short on corn compared to 297. They're long 53,000 on beans compared to 25. short 46 on meal compared to 53, and oil, they are short 4 compared to 3. And where might they be? I would expect that we're probably going to see that number, especially on corn, drop some more. I do think that a lot of what we're seeing in the marketplace yesterday and today is based on short covering. And, you know, it used to be that you could look at open interest from one day to the next and have a pretty good idea of what the market, you know, was telling you. You know, is the attitude changing? Now it sometimes takes 6 or 7 market days before you can even get close to figuring out what they're doing. So I do expect to see those numbers on corn especially decline and on beans increase.
It sounds, Jackie, as if you think that the recent trade, the movement since the reports were released, is as much about position squaring as it is about actual fundamental lifts in the marketplace.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the first of the month, and everybody, I believe, is just doing exactly that. Again, I do think that there is a good amount of contracts being closed with the commercial, and therefore the commercial is buying back those short futures. So as long as the market continues to stay, you know, have any strength, I think then we'll continue to see some strength here. But beyond that, once the farmer stops moving the grain and there isn't any more news to feed the bull, and I haven't heard very many people talk about the additional acres that the USDA said were available, I think that, you know, we'll settle back. Not enough has changed, Todd, to expect that we're going to go flying up to $4 right now. The weather is one of the only things I think that can do that.
Any other observations?
Well, I was gone last week, you know, and so I left here and I went across Missouri, up through Iowa, across Minnesota, into Wisconsin, back into Illinois, and then back into Missouri. And what I saw was that there are places, the typical places that are too wet most of the time. You could see they were late planted in Missouri and in southern Iowa. You saw a lot of, you know, very actively growing grain, but short. It looked, the color was good, everything was good, but it was very short. Then the further north you got, when you got up to Des Moines and started going north to Des Moines, you started seeing really dark green, beautiful, I mean, just gorgeous, gorgeous looking crops, just doing a good job. You could see there were a few places. As you get into lower part of Iowa, there's always a wet stretch in there that has a tough time. And you could see that they were planted later, but boy, beyond that, it was gorgeous. I-90 and going over to Rochester, unbelievably beautiful crops. Coming over into Wisconsin, good, really good crops for Wisconsin. A lot of places knee-high already, and we always used to say knee-high by the 4th of July was the determining factor for whether corn was on time. As you get down into Wisconsin, you saw a lot more impact from heavy, wet rain, you know, and so you saw variable crops, you know, kind of ocean-like crops in a few places. And then, you know, the further I got down into Wisconsin, the better the crop looked. And as I went into Illinois, it was interesting because up around Rockford, it didn't look bad, but it didn't look as good as I might have expected it to. But as you went further, you know, and further down, got into McLean County, looking really good. And then when you got south of Bloomington, it was amazing because the corn was nice, but it was suffering. It was hot and it was gray looking, you know. And so you could tell the heat and the wind were really having an impact on that. And then coming back down into Missouri, you saw some good growth on the corn, you know, from the week. But I'd have to say, in general, the majority of the grain is in pretty darn good shape.
What about other parts of the world?
Well, not too much to say about China this week other than they purchased a large amount of corn and sorghum out of the Gulf and the Pacific Northwest. And beans this week, they only took from the interior. Thought it was interesting, China added tariffs on Australian wheat and barley. And previously, they were totally tariff exempt. So, you know, this new tariff regime puts Australia good at the same tax level as other countries. They were always considered to be the favored country. And so it's going to last until December 31st. But got to wonder if Brazil's not taking if China's not taking a cue from us and trying to find things, make things more even. Now, we look at Brazil and Argentina. Oh, swarming locusts are attacking a big part of Argentina. Southern Brazil is hoping that these swarms are going to move north to Uruguay. And then if they do that, they might hit parts of the Rio Grande do Sul. Now, They've really put together a lot of resources to try and fight the locusts. They've got 46 ag airplanes on the border of Uruguay. If it looks like the grasshoppers are headed for Brazil, they have 426 ag airplanes available to them to fight them, but that hasn't always been the most successful thing. So probably the best thing that they can say is, you know, southern Brazil is headed into the winter season. You know, so the crop that's biggest at risk is wheat. And, you know, we're seeing similar situations, Todd, taking place in Pakistan, India, and the Middle East. So it looks to me like wheat has really got a chance of taking off at some point in time here. And, you know, all of this on top of COVID-19 and all their economic issues, you know, is just putting an unbelievable amount of pressure on all the governments that are involved.
It's always good to talk with you, Jackie.
Same here, Todd. Thank you.
Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. On this Wednesday, let's look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being here. Yesterday, the United States Department of Agriculture saw fit to take 5 million acres out of the estimate for planting across the United States, or at least the change from what producers told USDA they were planning to put in the ground back in March and to what they actually put in the ground as of June the 1st. And now that those numbers are in the pipeline, the trade will focus clearly on the weather forecast. What do we know about the next couple of weeks and the whole month of July?
Well, it certainly looks as though we're going to have an old-fashioned market, weather market here for a little while. We're definitely moving under a ridge of significance as we move forward through the holiday weekend and move into next week. This ridge of high pressure will see to it that it will warm up. I don't know that we'll be excessively hot, but we'll have a lot of humidity coming as the moisture from recent rainfall gets fed back into the atmosphere through evaporation. At the same time, there's still an upper-level low-pressure system over the lower Mississippi River Valley area near the Gulf Coast, and that low-pressure system, even though it's fairly far removed from us, will have a big influence on our weather by hogging all of the moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. So showers and thunderstorms occur often in the Delta and southeastern states, but very little moisture is going to come northward. And once we finish out this next 24 to 36 hours, we're going to be done with precipitation that is significant for a while. Now, there will still be some showers around, but there's just not going to be much moisture to work with. And so we'll see net drying across most of the region. Now, the ridge is expected to be over the heart of the Midwest here over the next couple of days. Retrograde a little bit to the west into the plains for a period of a few days late in the weekend, early next week, and then come roaring back into the Midwest for the middle to latter part of next week and into the following weekend. And it's during that time period that the ridge is expected to be strongest, and we may see some very warm temperatures occur at that point. High humidity, but very little rainfall potential except in the northern plains and across the Great Lakes region. And I think as we go into the period from the 10th through the 14th or 15th, we'll start seeing that ridge shifting back to the west again. And this time it'll stay out there for a while. Once that occurs, we'll start sending those little complexes of thunderstorms from the peak of the ridge down into the heart of the Midwest, as long as the Gulf of Mexico is open for a moisture source. And we should start seeing a little bit of rainfall periodically. But we're talking about mid-July already, so a lot of drying will occur between now and then. I think our crops will probably hang in there fairly well. We've got a good moisture profile right now, and without excessive heat over these next 5 to 7 days, I think we'll manage this first part of the drying period relatively well. But it's in the second week of the forecast that we'll start seeing a little more accelerated drying, and we'll need to get that ridge out of here as quickly as possible and open that door for some shower and thunderstorm activity so that we don't get too dry during that pollination period. I think we will stay in okay shape, relatively speaking, in late July, but I don't want to mislead anyone into thinking that we're going to have a perfectly timed rainfall and the crops are just going to do just fine. I think we're going to have some pockets of dryness, some areas of stress. There will be some crops that may struggle a little bit in late July into the first days of August. And but there's going to be other areas in the Midwest that will probably do relatively well. So we're probably not looking at any kind of serious issue like we had in 2012, even though there's some forecasters out there that think that we're going down that road. I don't personally think that'll happen. Now, I am a little bit more concerned about soybeans than I am corn, because I think the latter part of the growing season, late August and September, I think are going to be fairly dry and warm across a big part of the region. I think our corn is going to do okay, but I think soybeans may have a little more challenge ahead of them.
What is it that causes those concerns for you?
Well, it's actually multiple things. The first of which would be the tropical cyclone season. It's going to be a very active season, and I think that the southeastern United States will see multiple threats of storms coming either close to the region or actually moving inland. And if we keep the southeastern U.S. Subjected to tropical cyclones fairly often, there will be a tendency for ridginess to build up across the Midwest, similar to what we're going to see next week. And if the ridge is at that time already over the plains, which is where it should be, most likely the ridge is going to broaden out and encompass a larger part of the Corn Belt during that time period. So that's the first reason for the drier finish. The second would be that we do think that a La Nina will begin to evolve as we move from August to September. We won't be in a full-blown La Nina event, but just the mere fact that the atmosphere will be adjusting itself in response to the developing conditions will add in a little bit more warmth and perhaps take a little bit of precipitation out of the equation. So if we already have a drier tendency in late August and September, having a developing La Nina will only exacerbate that.
I don't recall if it's the La Nina or the El Nino, but one of the two has a greater droughty effect in South America. I'm wondering if you're looking that far forward into the seasons.
Yeah, we are looking at that. It is Brazil that tends to have a delayed start to seasonal rains. It's usually Rio Grande do Sul up into Paraná, and sometimes São Paulo and Mato Grosso do Sul that do struggle with dryness at times during a La Nina event. And I do think that that is a possibility this year. Normally, in a full-blown La Nina, by the time we get to the heart of their summer, the monsoonal rainfall in Brazil is usually pretty substantial. So the center west and center south crop areas, which would be Mato Grosso into Minas Gerais and parts of Sao Paulo, would probably be subjected to a lot of abundant rain during the heart of their summer. But getting started with that rainy season might be a little sluggish. And again, the far south part of Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul, into parts of southern Paraná and parts of Paraguay would probably have an ongoing battle with some dryness at times during the entire growing season.
Hey, thanks, Drew.
All right, have a great day.
That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.